Something for the weekend on Saturday. How are you? It's Trina Mari here, and Dr. Christina Mulvaney is here. She works with webdoctor.ie, a GP as well. And we want to talk to you today, Christina, about contraception, because I got an email in here today from a mother who has a 17-year-old daughter. She really wants to talk to her about contraception. And I know there are some parents listening today going, oh, for God's sake, they're so cool. They've been talking about it for years. But there are other parents who are mortified at having this conversation. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, my kids are getting a bit older. I can understand what they feel, because you're like, when is the right time? And even I suppose as a GP, you kind of have those same quandaries that happen, like, when is the right time to say this and stuff like that. I mean, it's such an important topic to discuss, not something that you want to rush under the carpet and let them kind of do their own little thing. It's probably better to be proactive and safer to be proactive, I suppose, in the long run. But yeah, very important topic and good question.
It's not as if you're given permission either. It's just, you know, you have to be making them aware.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, let them know, obviously, you know, they have choice, you know, that they're not getting pushed into anything that they're not happy to be doing. And then if they do choose that they want to do something, that they are protected. And, you know, I suppose not only from maybe like a pregnancy point of view, but obviously even an STI point of view, you don't want to have accidents happen on either front. Prevention is better than cure in this situation. Being aware of what to say if they feel pressured, you know, even just knowing what they could say to somebody if they weren't happy is probably good to kind of think of beforehand, instead of them the first time thinking about it when they're in that situation and be like, oh no, what do I say? You know?
Yeah. So would you mostly see, would the moms normally come in with the daughter, or would the daughters normally come in by themselves to talk to you when it comes to this?
I would say actually quite frequently they come in with the moms. Yeah, I would generally see, and even younger than 17, to be honest, because I suppose some kids, even like 12, 13, might have very heavy periods that are causing problems and they're missing school a lot and stuff like that. So I have to say, actually, generally, moms seem to be pretty proactive, and they generally definitely do tend to attend with their daughters, even when they're over 17, even when they're in their 20s, sometimes they'll come along to the office as like an extra support, which is fantastic that they feel that they have that open relationship with their moms.
Yeah. God, that's amazing. 12 and 13. So would 12 and 13 year olds who have particularly bad periods, would they be put on the pill at that age?
Sometimes that would be a treatment choice. I suppose not the one that you jump to necessarily, but if they were having extremely heavy periods, they were in a lot of discomfort, you've tried other methods like a pain relief and stuff like that, and they're missing loads of school, I suppose it is something that sometimes we would use as a treatment method. And yeah, occasionally kids that young would go on the pill as a method of obviously like controlling their periods rather than as a contraceptive option.
Yeah.
But they would be that young, and obviously they would be too young to be coming in of their own accord. So they would always be coming with a parent or guardian for a consultation like that. But that would be a pretty common consult as well, I suppose.
Actually, that is a question for you. Do you have to be over 18 to attend by yourself, or can you be younger to see your GP?
So you 16.
16, okay.
So 16, they can come in of their own accord. Under 16, there's a thing called the Gillick Law that falls into place, and that basically you kind of have to weigh up the pros and cons of the situation. Obviously, under 16-year-olds, which I have to be honest, that doesn't really happen that often. Mm-hmm. It's a rare consult that they come in of their own accord under that age. But there's like a Gillick competency that you have to fulfill, and you kind of, you know, encourage them to maybe ask mom or dad before you would do anything. But honestly, I can't even, certainly in the last couple of years, I haven't had any consults like that.
Yeah.
So it's not a common situation that I trip across. But I mean, it does definitely occur, and there's certainly plenty of papers that discuss that and stuff like that, because I suppose it is a little bit of a treachery kind of area.
It's a tricky one for you, isn't it? Yeah, if you're presented with that. So let's talk today, Christina, let's talk through the various contraception options available. Years ago, there was so little for people, and now there's quite a range, but there are pros and cons to everything, really. But we start off with the pill and who it might be suited to.
Excellent. So there is, like you said, so many options available. Pills generally fall into two kind of categories. So you have your combined oral contraceptive pill and your progesterone only pill. So either one would really be an option. Though I would say, I mean, unless there's contraindications to why you wouldn't be able to use the combined oral contraceptive pill, usually people would go with that as a first choice. Maybe it gives them a little bit better control of their period generally, like they can know when it's going to happen, and it's generally well tolerated and a good option. So how does it work? Traditionally, we would take that combined oral contraceptive pill, which has your two ingredients, your estrogens and your progesterones, and you take it for 21 days, and then you'd have a 7-day pill-free period. And with regard to that, I suppose there's a lot of change actually coming with that even now, because it was made traditionally based off the normal cycle, but as it's not really a normal cycle because you're taking a pill, we're realizing, well, you don't really need to be doing it 21 days on and 7 days off. I mean, it hasn't been changed completely in the guidance, but certainly there's lots of people that are now using, say, 3 packs back to back. So they'd have 63 days on and maybe take only a 4-day break. And probably a 4-day break is actually a good idea from the point of view, if you forget your, like, the 8th day up to take your pill, you're in real trouble with regard to possibility of pregnancy. Whereas if you take a 4-day break and you forget the 5th day, well, that's still within the 7 days, so you're still safe. And so I suppose we've been encouraging people maybe to take a shorter break, and that really works well for people. I suppose it's a preference thing how you want to take that. The progesterone-only pill, so that's just progesterone. It has lesser risks with regard to taking it. And I suppose people with high blood pressure and people that might have increased BMI, smokers, breastfeeding, different things like that, where they couldn't maybe take the combined oral contraceptive pill, they tend to choose that as an option. That's a pill that you take every single day, and a good option, and certainly works well as well. And I suppose has the lesser risks because that risk of clotting.
You know, when you take the combined pill for the 21 days and then you get the withdrawal bleed, is that a real period or not a real period?
I suppose we'd call it a fake period, a fake bleed. Yeah, it's kind of a forced thing. And that's why they're kind of looking at the situation again. And they're like, why are we doing this? We did it purely because most people's cycles are like this, not because it actually makes sense from a medical point of view. I suppose it's a fake bleed. And that's why the guidance is slowly changing with regard to 21 days on and 7 days off.
Yeah. And then a lot of women will take the pill after the 21 days. They'll just take their packs back to back to avoid that if they're going on a holiday or it's their wedding or whatever it might be, because they don't want to have a bleed during that time.
Yeah, and that's actually really quite fantastic. And actually another reason why people would do that is maybe they get really heavy bleed still, or painful bleed, or they suffer from migraines or some sort of headaches with regard to their period. So having the back-to-back, they don't have to go through that as often. And actually you were mentioning, like, why would one person pick one over the other? Like, some people actually really like having a bleed. They feel uncomfortable if they're not having a bleed, and progesterone only frequently will have no bleed at all. And that sometimes actually makes people feel really uncomfortable, and they'll be like, oh, I want a combined pill so that I actually have a bleed, because they feel, I suppose, it's more natural, although it's not really natural.
Should you be coming off the pill if you've been on it for a very long time? Should you take breaks?
So there was a trend or a feeling in the past that we should be taking breaks from the pill, and that has completely been washed away. Actually, if anything, it's discouraged now, especially with the combined oral contraceptive pill, because when you start onto the combined oral contraceptive pill, it actually, your risks of getting a clot, like a clot in the leg or in the lung, is increased. So it's increased just being on the pill in general, but it's particularly increased when you first start back on it. So if you keep coming back on and off the pill, you're at that higher risk more of the time, obviously. Now, I mean, compared to a pregnancy, it's still a lower risk. So overall, I suppose you're at a much lower risk because you're protecting yourself from getting pregnant. But yeah, no, it isn't recommended to go on and off the pill anymore. It's recommended just to stay on the pill and not take breaks. There's no medical reason to take a break.
Okay. Now, let's move on to the implant. What is the implant?
So the implant, I have to say, I think it's a fantastic form of contraception. It's like basically a little matchstick, which has only progesterone in it, that's just inside the arm. And it's put in like on basically a preloaded syringe that you put underneath the skin. You numb the area and obviously sterilize the area first, and you put it underneath the skin, and it lasts for 3 years. Reliability wise, well, it's probably like the best form of contraception on the market. So if you want something that's extremely reliable, which is not user dependent, because you don't have to remember to take your pill every day, which is a big problem with the pill generally, it works really, really well. It is fantastic. I suppose the most common drawback to it, though, or the biggest complaint, would be irregular bleeding. So you could get like no bleeding, you could get a little bit of spotting here and there, you might get like a lighter period maybe once a month ish or you could have what they call nuisance bleeding. bleeding, which is basically bleeding that is annoying you. And that would be a reason that people would want it taken out. However, I have to say, like I always tell people when I'm putting them in, like if you're having this after a few months, come back in, like tell us, because people seem to go out into the world and they tell all their friends, oh my God, this is horrible. I have all this news in Sweden, but they never come back to the GP, and there is ways of managing it, I suppose.
Okay,
so
yeah.
There's no, they shouldn't just keep giving out about it. They should come back to the GP because there is ways of trying to get that under control. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a fantastic form of contraception. And actually kind of thinking back to that 17-year-old that you're kind of mentioning, I mean, I wouldn't rush to putting them on it. From the point of view, I'd just try out contraception with them to just see initially first. But if it was going well, like for somebody that young, like they're not going to want to get pregnant for the next 3 years, which is how long the implant on lasts, and probably for longer. And I suppose being that age, you tend to be maybe a bit scattered and forgetful, and there's other mm-hmm. things that are more important to worry about than your pill every day. You know, if it's in there, you know that they're covered and you don't have to remind them to take their pill. It just works. And you can be like, okay, for 3 years, we don't have to think about anything really,
yeah.
unless obviously they're having a bit of nuisance bleeding. So it is something that in that age group and a little bit older, I would see a lot of people using.
If you're in the older age group, actually, and you wanted to get that removed before the 3 years, say if you wanted to try for a baby or something, can that be done?
Yeah. Absolutely. So okay. you can take it. So it lasts up to 3 years. But if you said like, yeah, 18 months later, you're like, actually, I want to have a baby now. Yeah, you can take it out and it's quite reversible. Literally, you take it out and you could potentially get pregnant before your next cycle. As soon as it's removed, it's not like you have to wait a certain period before it comes out of your system or anything like that. You're pretty much, you know, you could be pregnant within the month after of removing an implant on potentially.
All right. Okay. Now, yeah. the injection, I have had this injection many, many years ago. And I have to say, yeah. I thought at the time it was brilliant, and looking back now I really regret it, because when I look back I think it made me crazy and it made me gain so much weight as well, and I wasn't told that at the time that there was these kind of side effects, so I have to say yeah. I'm not a fan. Can you talk us through the injection?
So the injection is a 3-monthly injection. Again, it's progesterone only. I'll agree, I don't like it very much as well. I mean, I tell people about it, but I usually kind of explain the pros and cons, and like I suppose maybe myself discourage it. I don't know
yeah.
if that's a good thing or a bad
yeah.
thing.
I was finding myself crying like at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, and the thing about that, I suppose, is that could happen with any form of contraception, and that's a reason with any form of contraception that you also should go back to the GP, because like mood disturbance is a potential side effect when you're messing with hormones like that. But the reasons, I suppose, okay, so you have to go back every 3 months, and this is one problem. Nobody ever comes back every 3 months, so it gets complicated. People coming back 14, 15 weeks, it's like, oh, I'm a few weeks late, and you're like, oh, should I give it? Should I not give it? because are they pregnant? Maybe they are pregnant, maybe they're not pregnant. Like, it's better to go early than it is to go late. And so you're supposed to come back every 3 months or 12 weeks. That always ends up complicated, I find. So that's one of the reasons I personally don't like it, because then yeah. I end up like, I have to make a decision whether I'm going to give it to late or not. And then the other thing is that people can only use it for about 2 years before they need to switch to an alternative contraception, because that particular, so Depo-Provera, the injection, has been associated with reduced like bone density. So they don't yeah. recommend using it for longer than 2 years without having a break, just to let the bones kind of recover. Now they do recover, it's not like forever, but you have to also think, oh yeah, in 2 years I need to switch to something else. Whereas all the other forms of contraception, you can just keep using them for years and years and years, and there's no need to be like, oh, I'm gonna have to change to something else in a couple of years. But I would say I have a lot of people that still use it, and they really do like it a lot. Generally the ones that like it don't want to come off of it. I have to like really convince them to do it.
Really?
And the reason is it's very good generally at stopping your periods altogether. Like, it really
yeah,
works
it does,
well
yeah.
for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people like that. Compared to taking a pill every day, it's probably a lot more convenient to just do it once every 3 months mm-hmm. or so. So mm-hmm. I can see their point of view. I mean, obviously, I always tell people that it's available, but yeah, it's certainly not on my like favorite list.
Yes.
Oh, and one other actually thing about it, yeah. favorite things. Another thing about it is return to fertility. So remember I said when you remove the implant mm-hmm. on, you could be pregnant a month later. Depo-Provera is not like that. So return to fertility is very unpredictable. And sometimes people would be a year and 2 years after having depo and trying to still get pregnant. And then they come into you and they're having this consult and they're like, so when am I going to get pregnant? And you're like, there's no way of telling. It'll happen when it happens.
Yeah, it takes a while for the period to even come back. So you could be off for quite a while before you'll even notice that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why a consult that I hate having, because I can't like give an answer to them. I'm like, I don't know. It'll happen when it happens. And nobody's satisfied with that, you know, in an effort to avoid that complicated conversation down the road. I always warn people about that too.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, just don't bother with the injection. That's what I say.
Unless it's recommended to you, maybe.
The patch is another one.
Yeah, so the patch is very cool, or at least I think it is. It's very handy. You put it on once a week. It's exactly the same kind of concept as your combined oral contraceptive pill, because it has the two hormones in it. And you use one patch each week. So like every Sunday, you replace your patch, and you do, if you're doing it the traditional way, three patches in a row, and then a patch-free week instead of your pill-free week. Yeah. But you can also take that one back. So you could do 9 patches in a row and then have like a patch-free week or a patch-free 4 days. So that's an option available as well. You're supposed to be able to wear it swimming, and you're able to go into the shower and stuff. So you shouldn't be taking it on and off each time. But obviously, if it became like loose or it wasn't sticking or something like that, you need to replace it right away. But if it wasn't having good skin adherence, your risk of pregnancy obviously would increase with that. But yeah, really cool form of contraception that has less user dependence. Again, that's one of the problems with the pills. If you're not taking it regularly, it's not going to work properly. And you can't convince yourself that, oh, well, I took 4 of the 7 pills this week, I'm covered. You're not covered. You may as well not be taking it if that's happening. And that's where forgetfulness or user dependence, like that might be a better form, because they're better able to remember every Sunday I need to change this, rather than every single day at 8 o'clock I need to take my pill.
There's a great app, though, isn't there, around as well, where you can actually, you know, get the reminder on your phone to take your pill. The other thing is, if you forget to take it, is it true that you can take 2 pills together in one day? You can take it within a certain number of hours and you'll still be covered?
Yeah, so absolutely. So if you did end up missing a pill, you should make sure to take the forgotten pill as soon as possible. And so, yeah, if it ended up being 2 pills in one day, that would be okay to do. Yeah, you should take the forgotten pill as soon as you remember.
But if you're going into the taking 4 and 5 pills, forget it.
Okay, you don't want to take your whole pack in one day or anything. No. I wouldn't be, no more than you would take no more than 2 in 24 hours.
Finally, just one more, and I'm sure there probably are other forms of contraception to talk to your daughter about, but the IUD, the intrauterine device, or otherwise known as the coil. Now, I know a lot of people who use this. Can you talk us through what that is?
Yeah, so IUDs, there's a few different forms of them available. So you have hormonal ones like Marina Coil, which you probably have heard of, and there's newer ones like Jadis and Kalina. And then you have the copper coil. So the copper coil literally just uses copper and it has no hormone in it whatsoever. And actually, it can be even used as an emergency form of contraception. So sometimes people would have it put in instead of taking the morning after pill. And so they last varying amounts of time. So the shortest acting ones last about 3 years, and the longer acting ones, which would be your copper coil, can last as much as 10 years. And they have to be put in by a GP or in the hospital. They come in a very intimidatingly large box, but the device is actually quite small. It's only maybe a little over an inch in size, less than 2 inches anyway. And it's basically inserted into the uterus. It's a device that sits inside the uterus and prevents pregnancy. And actually Marina, as well as being used as a contraceptive device, it's actually used a lot for people with like bleeding issues, especially heavy bleeding and stuff like that, because it's fantastic at stopping bleeding. So it would be, some people would have maybe a tubal ligation where they've been sterilized, but they would actually have a Marina coil in as well because they want to stop the bleeding or control the bleeding better. So yeah, fantastic form of contraception, lasts for a long time. You don't have to remember it every day, and works really, really well.
A friend of mine was only telling me last week how she was doubled over in pain a couple of weeks ago, didn't know what it was. And when she went to her GP, it turned out that her coil had moved slightly. So that can happen, I guess, but it's to know, get to your GP as soon as you get pain, because you shouldn't have pain.
No, it shouldn't be something that you even notice afterwards. Like once it's been in there, I mean, obviously like maybe for the day or the couple of days after, you might have some cramping and stuff like that as your body adjusts to it. But it isn't something that like weeks and months afterwards, you should be like, oh, I know that device is inside me because I can feel it, or, you know, it's causing me back pain or whatever. Yeah, if you were having pain or any issues that were not resolved resolving quite quickly afterwards. I mean, obviously there might be some bleeding and stuff like that after you have the coil in, but that should resolve fairly quickly afterwards and shouldn't be an ongoing complaint. Absolutely, if you had severe pain at any stage, get reviewed by a doctor. Yeah.
Okay, you must go to your GP for this. Can I just say there was a terrifying trend on TikTok there a few months ago where women were removing their own coil. Such a dangerous thing to do.
Oh my God, I heard about that. I was totally taken back when I heard that. I was like, what? What are people doing? I heard people doing TikTok videos, like how-to videos for removing their IUDs. A terrible idea. I definitely would not recommend doing that at all. We have to do special training in order. Like a GP can't just decide they're putting in coils, for instance. You have to do training in how to put them in and how to take them out and stuff like that. Such a dangerous thing to do. And I was actually, when I was reading, I was like, I wonder how much of these are failing. I actually saw there was a statistic that as many as 80% of people that are removing or trying to remove these devices are having failures or ending up in like A&E because of it. Yeah. So not a wise move and definitely not recommended. I mean, there's so many things that could go wrong, and definitely if you want your coil removed, fine, like go to the GP, have a chat. Sometimes actually the reason why the person wants to have it removed is like they're having maybe some sort of issues with bleeding, and then you'd like talk through it and do something different, and then they're like, oh, actually this is fine now. So if you're having issues with the coil, definitely go and have a chat with the doctor about it, and they will remove it for you, you know. Or they might be able to come up with a solution to the problem that you're having with it, and then you can keep it in and then everybody's happy. Definitely not to be looking at TikTok videos on how to remove your own coil.
I think they're the attention seekers that are putting those videos on TikTok, just so dangerous. Tell me about webdoctor.ie. What are you doing there?
Yeah, so webdoctor, it's a great site. We do all sorts of stuff. So we do a lot of repeat prescriptions. They like the pill prescription, but we do video consultations and then other kind of repeat prescriptions, say for like Viagra or so erectile dysfunction, maybe asthma medication, allergy kind of medications like antihistamine. So yeah, lots of repeat medications that are available through the website. Actually, in more recent times, we started doing repeats for like blood pressure scans, where you just basically fill out a questionnaire. And the same with your pill scripts, you fill out a questionnaire, and then maybe we might have some questions, so we might send you a message back, answer those, and then we can send a prescription straight to the pharmacy for you. Or again, like actually thinking back to like that person with their first prescription for the contraceptive pill, generally we usually recommend they have a video as a first time having a conversation about a pill and stuff like that. But you can have a pill conversation through a video consult or really any consult on any topic. Generally, we would have urinary tract infections, a COVID-related consults and stuff like that. So a combination, I suppose, of video consultations and forms where people will fill them out, and then we can prescribe based on the answers that they have in the questionnaire.
Yeah, very good. What do you do, though, when you need a urine sample? That's the only drawback.
I mean, we can do pathology forms. So sometimes we would do a pathology form and patients will go to their like local pharmacy and collect a sterile container, make sure that they label it. That's something that we find it gets forgotten. So you need to like put your name, date of birth, when the sample was taken, the time that it was taken and what it is, that it is urine. And then they can drop it into the local hospital. Now you need to obviously give a shout to them first because they might have certain procedures in place. And I suppose just walking into places like that these days is not really accepted anymore. But yeah, so sometimes we'd have people drop in urine samples to their local lab, and then the results would be sent back to us and we share a copy of those results with them. But I suppose when you're talking about like a consult where the person has like your urinary symptoms and like, do you prescribe? I suppose you go off of what their symptoms are at the time. On that note, I mean, a lot of times you can actually treat a UTI. Actually, they did a big study in Canada that shows that basically 8 out of 10 times you could treat UTI, so long as they didn't have obviously like really systemic symptoms like fevers and really unwell in themselves. But 8 out of 10 times they were finding patients were responding to just taking 2 to 3 liters of water, cranberry, say capsules, and Nurofen, like 400, or ibuprofen, 400 milligrams 3 times a day for 5 to 7 days. And that actually treated 8 out of 10 UTIs. It didn't require an antibiotic. So I would encourage that an awful lot. Antibiotic resistance is a really, really big, big, big problem, particularly in UTI, because it's the place that we overprescribe the most. And so we would obviously go by symptoms, and if they were bad, say go right ahead and take your antibiotic and send it straight to the pharmacy. But yeah, we can send samples to the lab as well where we can get results.
That's amazing.
That way.
We never would have thought that technology would have moved on so much that you'd be able to access your doctor online. It's incredible. Webdoctor.ie. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today. That's been so interesting. And I'm sure mammies of 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds, they've been very informed today. It is a difficult conversation to have. Once you have it, it's grand. And at least you know that your daughter has all the information. She might even know the information. It's just to kind of be supportive, I guess, as well. So thanks so much for coming on. Dr. Christina Mulvaney there, and have a lovely weekend.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
Bye-bye. It is something for the weekend on Ireland's Classic Hits.